Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from GLT listeners. Join the community of news consumers who listen to Sound Ideas and are also willing to support it financially. Learn more about listener-supported radio and GLT at WGLT.org.
Up next is a special edition of Sound Ideas and Illinois Issues Forum here on 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org. You can personalize the NPR One app. Learn more at WGLT.org/NPR1. With a few clicks, teach it what you like and what you don't. And if you hear GLT or NPR news you like but want to hear later, you can save it. Get NPR and GLT news and podcasts all in one place. And download and try the free NPR One app. Learn more at WGLT.org/NPR1.
I'm Sean Crawford, NPR Illinois News Director, and tonight's program a partnership with WGLT. We are in Normal at the Normal Theater. We're glad you could come out tonight, and also to those of you who are listening on the air and through social media. We're traveling across Illinois this year, and we're waiting to hear how voters, people like yourselves, feel about the various issues that are facing the state. Tonight we are focused on the state's fiscal health. We're also here to talk about higher education. We have seen major cuts in higher ed spending by the state over the last many years. Tuition and fees have continued to go up. Fewer Illinois high school graduates are going to school in the state. What are some of the problems? What are some of the solutions? We hope to hear more tonight, and we look forward to hearing from you. We've asked you to submit questions and comments, and if we call on you, we'd like you to step up to the microphone over to my right, and we have a great panel that will help guide our discussion tonight as well. I'm going to let them introduce themselves. I'm going to just start right here next to me.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for being here. My name is Katie Anselment. I'm the Director of Constituent Relations for Eastern Illinois University, which is a strange way of identifying that I handle government relations for the university. I have been with the university for, I think, 6 years. Prior to that, I spent 5 years as a contract lobbyist and 5 years on Illinois House legislative staff.
Hello, I'm Erica Hunt. I'm a policy researcher and analyst at the Center for the Study of Education Policy at Illinois State University. We are a P20 policy center, so we study and examine issues from early learning, K-12, higher education, and workforce development. So when I look at these issues, I tend to look at it from a continuum of education and support.
Hi, my name is John Walsh. I'm the Government and Public Affairs Manager for the McLean County Chamber of Commerce. So we represent a little over 1,000 businesses here in McLean County. And obviously, the folks that are coming out of our higher education institutions are becoming our workforce and those who we represent. So excited to be here tonight.
And again, this is going to be a two-way conversation. We're going to be hearing from the panel tonight, but we also want to hear from you. So again, get your questions in if you could. And to get us started tonight, I'm going to again start right next to me here with Katie talking on the panel, and we'll go right down the line. If you can give us your perspective on higher education in both the state and what you're seeing here locally, especially, what are some of the critical issues that those running for office should be discussing?
Well, it's hard not to focus on funding. We've lived through a historic budget impasse, and we all lived through it. So here we are. Now it's time to revitalize the public universities in Illinois. So I think, at least as someone from the inside of a public university, that is how what we see being the major issue is revitalizing our public universities after really a funding, a divestment on the part of the state since 2002, and then a critical divestment over the time of the budget impasse. So we always, as Illinoisans and as Americans, prioritize education as the, you know, the top priority, as it should be. I have 4 children attending public schools myself. But we need to stop using higher education as the balance wheel for when budget times are tough, and start considering it also a priority.
And just focus in on that for a moment. One of the reasons it seems that higher education is such a target is it has a way of raising money, and that is through tuition. But have we hit a point from you work with primarily Eastern Illinois University? Are we seeing a point, a tipping point for that, as being able to raise tuition and make up for that shortfall?
Okay, yes. And so first I would point out that K-12 education has a way of raising money, too, through property taxes, but nobody would let the state stop funding that for 2 years and say, oh, you guys can just fund that from the local level. Just like the same in the same way, we shouldn't expect public universities to just rely on student tuition as their sole revenue source. That's what makes them public universities, this partnership with the state. The idea is that the state contributes a significant portion so that it can be kept affordable to allow for public access. Yes, I believe that most of the, at least regional publics, and I wouldn't venture to speak on behalf of the University of Illinois, but most of us feel that we have hit a bit of a ceiling in terms of the tuition and fees that we are charging. We try to be as efficient as possible, but the students we are serving, or many of the students we are serving, cannot afford to pay more. So yes, I think if we want to maintain access and affordability, the state has got to recommit to funding public higher education.
Erica, your thoughts on critical issues with higher education.
Yeah, I would point out two critical issues. And one would be, as Katie said, the cost of higher education is a critical issue. And looking at it, not just an Illinois perspective, but if you look at students weighing if going to college can outweigh the benefits of the cost of education outweighs the benefits of the student debt that you acquire. The recent data I have seen on the student debt from student loans is $1.4 trillion. It's at an all-time high. And several articles I've been reading, including not just news articles, but business articles, are highlighting the crisis we could be in with a financial crisis, comparing student debt crisis to what we experienced with the housing environment. I think that is an issue that I think needs bipartisan focus and attention, both in Illinois and at a national level. I think in Illinois, one of the major issues we face is students leaving the state for college. In 2005, I did a study with Dr. Diane Dean at Illinois State University, where we looked at student migration. At that time, Illinois was second only to New Jersey in how many students left the state. We were the highest number, second to New Jersey. And as a result, it was a big, what we call a brain drain. At that time, we did the study. We interviewed students, parents, guidance counselors, school officials to see why students were leaving the state. And what we found is that they wanted, most of them were going to nearby states, institutions and states. At the time we did the study, a third of the freshman class was at University of Iowa, and they were looking for comparable factors to what we don't offer in Illinois. What we were losing as far as net revenue was an average of $700 million over the lifetime of a cohort of these students. And what we also found is that we were exporting our what we might call best and brightest students. The fastest growing population coming into Illinois was low-income families. So when you look at our investment in the K-12 system, we continue to invest more in the K-12 student or the K-12 student populations, yet we're losing some of our best and brightest to other states. And at that time, 50% of them were not likely to come back to Illinois, so they were more likely to stay in those states, thus them attributing the benefits of that. Current data I've been looking at the Illinois Board of Higher Education is we haven't gotten any better. Numbers of students exporting and going out of state to other colleges since the budget crisis has continued to increase. And so we're continuing to invest more and more in our K-12, our pre-K education system, yet losing some of our best and brightest. And I think this is a serious issue for Illinois that we need to pay attention to.
And John?
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that Dr. Hunt touched on is the idea of the brain drain. And you know, for the business community, that's obviously a huge concern, right? Because the folks that we need to keep Bloomington Normal, McLean County on top, and to be a star of Central Illinois and frankly the state, that we need those folks here. that's the one thing that we've been working with the business community, the business owners, especially to figure out where business community and education can work together to try to figure out where some of those holes might be as well.
John, what is the business community's role when it comes to making sure the higher ed institutions are strong? I'm guessing having jobs available for kids when they get out.
Yeah, absolutely. I think not only having jobs available when they get out, but understanding and having a two-way understanding both from higher education and from the business community what the needs are on both sides. Because I think, you know, ISU, Heartland, Illinois Wesleyan, they could do a great job of educating our students. But if they're not fitting in with the needs of the business community, then that'll be an issue. And the reverse as well, if the business community doesn't communicate those needs and what they're looking for in graduating college students, then how's that relationship work?
And again, make sure to get your questions in because we'd like to hear from you tonight. And just hold it up if you've got one to turn in. Somebody will be by to pick it up. Katie and Erica, let me both ask you, since you work with the universities. Last year, I believe Illinois State, I saw, and I haven't seen new numbers yet, about a 9% decline when it came to freshmen, incoming freshmen. Double-digit declines at Western, Eastern, Carbondale. Is it noticeable on these campuses, and what's the impact that's having on the actual campuses themselves?
I'm glad you asked that. Just today, Eastern is happy to announce that our freshman class for this current year is up 25% over last year, and our overall student enrollment is up 7%. So we are thrilled to tell you that. But was it noticeable, the decline? Yes.
And that's 25% after some declines that we've seen. So
correct.
So
we're not back to where we were at our peak,
right?
For sure. But in the last 10 years, this is the first time we've had any sort of a notable increase. And the budget impasse was particularly troublesome for us.
Has that resulted in, at Eastern, I think there was even some job cuts at the Eastern campus, but has it resulted in, like, certain degree programs not being offered, things like that?
The budget did not directly result in any programs being cut. We did do some programmatic realignments to be more respondent to the workforce and educational desires of students, so to respond to the market, basically. But we did lay off, I believe, 25% of our employees. It was not professors. It was administrative, professional, and civil service. And even administrators, including myself, took, in the year of the impasse, 24 furlough days, so basically like skipping 1 month's paycheck. It's been a tough road, and I think Western took furloughs for 3 years. Mm-hmm. So everyone has pitched in at these campuses. Some have had to sacrifice very much. But things are looking good now, so we just need to keep going in that direction.
And it sounds like Mattoon, Bloomington, Macomb, Carbondale, when you have those job cuts, I mean, that has an impact, even if it's not a huge number of people from a sense of a major plant closing or something. It still has a huge impact in what is traditionally a smaller community.
Certainly. Short of maybe hospitals, we are typically the largest employers in our campus towns.
Erica, can you talk about the impact that this has had on Illinois State University?
I can't talk on behalf of the university, but I can talk about my role in the Policy Center in our College of Education. I've been doing a lot of work around teacher and principal shortages and fear of not having enough teachers for our schools. So looking at the data that I've seen, many teacher candidates are colleges of education across the state, and I can't speak specific for Illinois State, but their enrollment numbers are down in teacher education, with many students going out of state for teacher education programs. If you compare that to the trends we found with our migration study, if 50% of those students that go out of state for their teacher education don't come back to Illinois to serve as a teacher, that's further acerbating our problem of potential teacher shortages in Illinois. One thing we are trying to do is get a handle on data. Working with the State Board of Education, I serve on the Governor's P20 Education Council, so this is some work we've been doing with the Governor's office, is trying to find areas of need with the largest projected vacancies and in what areas, what certification levels, so we can be working with colleges of education to get students in those programs. If you look at data, often there's a surplus of education majors in certain, elementary education majors in certain majors, but also a drastic need for special ed teachers, ELL teachers, and in specific regions of the state. So if we can be more intentional of that and work in mutually beneficial partnerships between colleges of education, government, policymakers, and school districts, we can at least be targeted in our efforts here.
And John, fewer kids are coming to, say, Illinois State University or Illinois Wesleyan, for that matter, and not living in the area. That has to impact business. Are you noticing an impact yet from some of this downturn in enrollments we've been seeing?
That's not something that we have specific data on as of yet. I think, you know, the general consensus is that for Illinois State weathered the storm better than most. I think that there's data that shows that. But, you know, that being said, it is very important that we continue these conversations, because even though they did, weather the storm fairly well, it's not sustainable.
Jim Russell, Jim, if you could step to the microphone, we had a question from you. We'd like to hear what you have to say, and our panel will do their best to answer that for you. Go right ahead.
Thank you. First of all, thanks for hosting this. I'm glad you're doing this across the state, and we appreciate our turn at the podium or at the microphone. Obviously, some state universities are better off than others, and for a variety of reasons. Some are really hurting. I wonder how close some of those universities might be to possibly closing. And is anybody talking about that being part of the solution, that maybe we just need to pare down our state university, base so that we can, pull more money to saving the universities, the other universities in the system?
I'll throw that to the panel. Let me just say we did a similar forum last week in Carbondale, and Carbondale is having some issues right now because they have seen enrollment decline on the Carbondale campus. They are actually seeing it go up on the Edwardsville campus. There is a fight going on in the SIU system over should there be a redistribution of money. Now, in some cases, like let's just say Eastern, ISU, that's not so much the concern, but they are having a fight amongst themselves. We've seen cuts, I believe it was mentioned, at Western Illinois University. Eastern is one of those that has come up quite a bit. There are people I've heard before saying, maybe it's time to rethink the structure of higher education in the state, and some of these regional schools may have to look a little bit different. And Katie, if you'd like to weigh in on that and on what you've heard, what you've, some of the thoughts have been.
Sure. I definitely think the impasse sort of brought back some of those rumors that have circulated for a long time about do we have too many universities. I would be hesitant to speak on behalf of any of the other public universities at this time to this point, but I would just say on behalf of Eastern, I acknowledge that we were, one of the institutions caught up in those rumor mills for a while due to the fact that we were fairly honest in admitting that we were going to be having some fiscal difficulties if the state didn't come through during the impasse. They did, and we are fine. We are doing well, in fact. As you can see by our enrollment numbers now. So I know the staff at Eastern sometimes cringes about this term, but our president came in the year of the impasse. He literally took office in June, and the impasse set in, in July, I think? So I was like, hi, I'm your government affairs person. We have no budget. And then we didn't for a very long time. It was very challenging and very trying, but he actually, even ahead of knowing there was going to be such a long impasse, immediately looked at our numbers and said, I'm sorry, but we're staff heavy. And so he right-sized. That's the word that I know a lot of staff don't appreciate. It's not that everyone wasn't appreciated, but we had more employees than we needed to serve the number of students we had. So we right-sized the whole institution, and then due to the impasse, he did have to issue more layoffs and reductions, and we have I think, only called back a few of those people. But as I indicated previously, those were not faculty, and that's not to say that the people who provide our support services are not incredibly needed and valued. But we have maintained our classroom experience for our students, and that's why, actually, we have, even throughout the impasse, despite the rumors you may have heard, Eastern has remained the number one public regional university in Illinois every year. Our outcomes are amazing. So we're not going anywhere. The discussions can continue to be had, and we will continue to put our marks against everyone else's.
Erica?
I'll talk about this more generally from a policy perspective. But I think the thing to consider when you think about do we have too many universities, I think we need to figure out what are our needs as a state, what are our workforce development needs, what are our economic needs, what are our education needs. In the area that I work in with, you know, working with schools on preventing teacher shortages, some of the school districts that are struggling the most are in the most isolated, depressed areas of the state that don't have geographic access to a higher education institution. And so access is a huge factor. If you're talking about economic development and you're working with a population that doesn't have technology access, which is very common in rural areas, or the distance access to be able to go and get their advanced degrees, I think you're further depressing certain economic or certain regions of the state. There's a center in Lake County that was developed, 20 years ago, and it's kind of a collaboration of universities throughout the state to bring that very thing, workforce development and education, higher education need, to that area in the state that didn't have access, close vicinity to higher education institutions. So I think there's always the idea and the possibility of solutions for doing these and ideas, but I think we first need to identify what's the problem, where's the need, and then develop those solutions versus letting it be directed by the budget.
Is there a possibility, though, that we could see one school that focuses in on one thing, maybe this, you know, everybody, there was a period of time where it seems like a lot of the schools wanted to do everything. So maybe they're not as strong in a certain area. Maybe they don't attract as many kids. Mm-hmm. So some reworking of the curriculum in different schools.
The Board of Higher Education did an initiative like that in the 1990s. It was very political, but I've heard conversations of them starting that again, or at least doing some kind of audit of what do enrollments look like in certain degree programs in universities and where are areas that they're strongest. I think community colleges are a huge asset of the state, but we have to remember that they don't have baccalaureate programs in many of these. There was legislation this last year for community colleges. Well, baccalaureate and nursing, and that did not pass. It was a hugely controversial legislation, but those ideas are out there.
John, you can weigh in on this if you'd like. I did want to ask you another question as well, though, since you're not in the higher education community as much. And one of the things we keep hearing on these forums is the idea that a lot of young people don't need to go to a four-year school. They need to go to a trade school. They need to learn vocations. Mm-hmm. And maybe a bachelor's degree is not for everybody. Are you seeing that in the business community? And what I'm also hearing is a lot of business people saying that they don't find people with those skills enough. Are you seeing that in this business community?
Absolutely. We are seeing that quite a bit. And I think it's a growing concern. I think that the chamber we recognize and we realize that a four-year degree or two-year degree certainly can set you up for a wonderful life. But the one thing that we are really trying to push out as well is that you can make a good life for yourself and for your family with a certification, with some of these trade skills that are learned. We are definitely seeing a shortage of that, especially here. We are seeing companies that are investing their own funds into their own training facilities because they are just having that much of a struggle finding the workforce. The other big piece, and one of the things that we're finding as much as what we call the hard skills are the soft skills, and I think that that's one of the biggest things that we are seeing, especially a lot of the same folks that are looking for a little bit more of these technical skills, getting people to show up on time and pass drug tests and call off when they're not going to come to work. It seems hard to believe, but that's one of the biggest issues that we're hearing today is these soft skills. And so that's one of the things that we're really working with employers is to have them communicate with our education systems and how do we kind of instill that a little bit more.
And the drug test issue is a real one because I've heard from other employers who say that it is almost impossible to fill certain jobs anymore and find people who can pass those on a regular basis. So they're actually considering, I think in some cases, maybe certain marijuana tests and stuff, they're actually looking the other way on some of these?
You do hear that. I can't name any names, obviously, but I think that is it's a real concern for folks, especially as, you know, with the marijuana specifically, as it becomes more culturally accepted. It's becoming more and more difficult to retain a drug-free workplace, and that's one of the things that the Chamber does on another note. As the conversation surrounding recreational marijuana become more prevalent, that is one thing that we focus on is protecting employers who want to retain a drug-free workplace.
Erica and Katie, let me go back to the original question there, and that was regarding the idea that not everybody needs to go to a four-year school. And Erica, you can start if you'd like, but you know, is that a real concern as well that maybe too many people are trying to go to four-year schools and that not only can they not find jobs taking on more debt to go, but maybe they're just not cut out for that?
I think what I'm hearing on the policy landscape, both at the state and national level, is conversations about being college and career ready. And so I think that a lot of those conversations are happening more in high schools of things like career pathways that high schools are putting into effect that help to direct students to career goals, whether it's a college education or an industry certification. But I do think there is an importance to some kind of advanced certification or some kind of, I hate to call it post-secondary education, but any job, even trade jobs, require some kind of industry training. So I think when you call it career and college readiness, but aligning it with realistic student goals and putting them on that pathway in collaboration with industry and higher education, I think that's a lot of the direction I'm witnessing.
Katie?
Sure. I definitely don't think everyone needs to have a college degree. I definitely don't think college is for everyone. However, I do think that I don't think the public universities feel that too many people are getting college degrees in Illinois, too few are. So, I mean, we'd be happy to help them in any way.
We do have another question from the audience. We'd like to call up to the microphone. I hope I got the name right here. First name is Jurgen, I hope. If Jurgen can step up, appreciate that. While he's making his way to the microphone, let me just remind everybody we are in Normal at the Normal Theater. It's our NPR Illinois Forum Series, Election 2018, Seeking Solutions. Our panel tonight includes Katie Anselment, who is Director of Constituent Relations at Eastern Illinois University, John Walsh, Government and Public Affairs Manager of the McLean County Chamber of Commerce, and Dr. Erica Hunt, a senior policy analyst at the Center for the Study of Education Policy here at Illinois State University. Go right ahead with your question.
Yeah, hi, I'm Jürgen Schroer and live here in Normal, retired from ISU and lived here a long time. And I have more comments than questions. Number one is with respect to the budget, many voters or prospective voters say, well, there's too much waste, there's too much corruption, just get rid of it and we'll be fine. Well, of course, I'm sure we'll all be in favor of improving in those areas, but it would not be enough. And then they might say, well, let's get rid of, things we don't need. So my question to those then would be, what services of the state would you like to get rid of, in order so you don't have to pay so many taxes? And my final suggestion is that a graduated income tax would be a great idea. And then going back once more to suggestions where money could be saved is like from pensions. Well, years ago, the legislature decided it didn't have enough money to support salaries of teachers and faculty and so on, so we just give them a better retirement income. So that's where it came from. Thank you.
Thank you. And I will try to take a little bit of that as we go along here. But John, let me ask you first, because I don't know if the McLean County Chamber has taken any position on the idea of a graduated income tax. I know some business groups have been opposed to it. It has come up in the governor's race this year. It's been brought up many times before. Illinois has a flat tax, and a graduated tax would tax people more based on the income they make. So people at a little bit higher level would pay more, and the theory behind it was bring in more money to the state. But John, I don't know if that's been discussed at your group.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we don't have a position just simply because there has not been a proposal with the numbers that we could take a real look at. It is something that the business community is typically wary of. I think that, you know, when you listen to the concerns of the business community, Illinois is a very high tax state. And we have a very high tax burden with the property taxes. The income tax were just increased last year. State and local taxes, they typically add up. I think, you know, one other concern and one thing that we are looking at tonight is the massive loss of population that Illinois is going through. We've been losing population straight for since 2013, and last year alone we lost 33,000 people. There are folks out there, there are businesses out there that believe that a graduated income tax could accelerate that. And when you have your highest earners in a variable graduated income tax formula, when you take those out, just the sheer math of a graduated income tax is the taxes go up on the rest of folks on the scale. So do we have a position? Does the McLean County Chamber have a position on graduated income tax? It's not at this time, just because there are not specifics. There was one bill floated by Rep. Martwick earlier this year, but it is something that the business community is very wary of.
And that population loss, he mentioned 33,000 jobs. That was the tops in the country by number, at least last year. So there is real concern. Are kids going out of school? Why aren't, you know, are they coming back if they go out of school? That certainly, I think, leads into this. You're seeing some of that, aren't you, as far as, people you've talked to in the higher ed community, Erica, Katie? I mean, the kids, once they leave the school, once they leave the state, a pretty good chance they're going to stay somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, when I was doing our study in 2005, and we talked to guidance counselors, universities outside of the state, especially private universities and some of the surrounding Big Ten universities, were actively recruiting our students, aggressively marketing and offering reciprocity packages that were better than in-state institutions could offer. Now, I haven't replicated the study since then, but when I've talked to friends who have kids going out of state, those marketing strategies are even more aggressive because they know they have an even more viable population now. So other states have picked up on it, other institutions, and they know Illinois is a ripe market for this and get even more riper. So if we're going to invest in our education system, we have to make sure we're keeping our best and brightest population in the state.
I'll let Katie answer that, but before she does, let me see if John, I hope I have this right, Bozauskas. John, if you could make your way to the microphone. But Katie, if you'd like to weigh in on that as well, kids leaving the state and whether they come back.
Sure. I hesitate to use a statistic that I can't place where I heard it, but I thought I heard at some point during these discussions about out-migration that maybe one out of every three who leaves does not come back, or was it two out of every three?
Do you
know,
Erica?
50. Oh, it's 50%.
Yeah. At the time.
Oh, at the time you did your study. Okay. Yeah, obviously it's a huge problem for Illinois economically, particularly in light of the fact that, again, maybe it was Erica who made the comment earlier that the students we're mostly losing are our best and brightest. Not that we don't want to keep all of them, but we're losing the ones who are high achieving but not quite high enough to get the full ride scholarship to any of our current institutions. There was a recent new scholarship program started by the state. It's just been enacted in the last month. I was at the bill signing, called Aim High. It's to try to deal with this sort of an out-migration, that of the best and brightest. and each institution will get to set its own parameters because we all serve different student populations, as you all know probably. But the idea would be that it would be more merit-based. Not entirely merit-based, but more merit-based. I think it can have other parameters as well. But right now, MAP, which serves low-income students, is our largest and most fantastic financial aid program we have in the state of Illinois that's funded by the state. And it does a good job. I won't say great, because when I was a student at Eastern, it actually paid full ride.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I'm not that old. but it does a good job still of helping those who are most in need, making it affordable for them to attend public universities. But we don't do a great job, as a state at least, of providing incentives for middle-income, high-achieving students to stay in state. And so we're trying to go after that now.
Yeah. If I could bring it to the gentleman's comment, though, if you support a graduated income tax and you have your best and brightest leaving the state, those are those that are likely to earn a higher income. And so those are the ones leaving the state. And if these trends continue where we're bringing in the highest migrating population is the low income, I mean, what kind of projections does that show for Illinois? And that's just putting into perspective of that scenario. But that gives you kind of a forecast of where we could be going in Illinois if we're not strategic about it.
John had a question, and go right ahead, John.
Good evening, and thank you for holding this forum. I really appreciate it. My name is John Pazoskis, and I'm kind of coming at this from a local level. I have been on the Unified Board of Education for 12 years and have gone through this whole cycle of not having a budget, and for a school district to have to try to guess what our money will be for the year has been absolutely torturous, is mm-hmm. the best way I could say it. Reality is our expenditures exceed our revenues. Mm-hmm. There's no two ways about it. It is because of past sins where we chose not to fund pensions. We chose for decades to just kind of kick the can down the road. Reality is our expenditures must exceed revenues just because of our commitments. Now, we have constraints. We have a constitution that has built-in labor laws that says we cannot adjust pensions forever and ever, amen. That's a heck of a constraint. I heard earlier on, and I guess I'm going to make a correction, that, well, local school district can always raise taxes. Well, we have tax rate caps. The caps are firm, and you cannot go around it without a referendum. Mm-hmm. Trust me, referendums are very difficult to get. So, you know, local districts do not have that wonderful flexibility. Most of those are tapped out. As a matter of fact, Unit 5 is looking for a referendum in 2020. And this year, all of us homeowners are going to get a $200 surcharge just to pay the bills for this year because they're floating some bonds. So what I'm trying to say to you is we have constraints. We have tremendous constraints. And I think for this state to attract students to come back and all that, we have to bite the bullet and perhaps a graduated income tax. Mm-hmm. Perhaps and if graduated income tax doesn't work, we have to up the income tax again to better balance the expenditures of local real estate taxes versus income taxes versus sales taxes. But if we don't recognize and accept the fact that we have to increase our revenue, and that means more taxes, we're never going to get there.
John, let me just follow up on that with you, because we've been in a couple of locations that are near the borders of Illinois, including the Quad Cities, for example. We've heard from people there who say, I'm ready to pack up and move into Iowa mm-hmm. because I'm really tired. And property taxes, and fairly, are a big part of that. But would an income tax, in your mind, that wouldn't drive more people to do the same?
In my opinion.
Income tax increase.
Yeah, in my opinion, I think the fact that we think our income taxes are high, but in reality, flat income tax at the rate we have is actually very low compared to other states. And also there are little things like, for example, I think it's Missouri, I may be wrong on that, mm-hmm. where you go to register your car, and depending on the value of the car, right. you pay one hefty tax. So there's all kinds of ways that money can be raised surreptitiously, if that's the right way of saying it. Mm-hmm. So, but in my mind, an income tax, although it feels like it's wrong, I think it will not drive people out of the state. But that's my opinion.
Okay. Appreciate the questions and comments there. Let me go to the panel, and whoever would want to weigh in on that, go ahead.
I was just going to respond because perhaps that was me you were thinking of who talked about raising property taxes. K-12 funding is actually what I handled for the 5 years I was on legislative staff. I'm very, very aware that you can't easily raise taxes. I was actually apparently inarticulately trying to explain that just like K-12 can't actually fund all of its operations for 2 years off of only its local property tax revenues, higher ed also can't operate just off of student tuition. It doesn't work, not for a public university at least. We're not private institutions. We're bound by the state. We have certain regulatory obligations. So the math just doesn't work. That was the point I was trying to make. I just wanted to clarify. I definitely understand that you cannot just raise taxes however much you need.
And from a local school district perspective, you have limitations. But like you said, higher education, it's not so much a limitation on how much you can raise tuition in writing, but there's a point where you're going to lose students too.
Right, and that actually brings up a point I was hoping to make this evening, which is that I do think it gets lost on some people that for public universities, we are one of, if not the only, state institutions that are, again, state institutions or state agencies, as some might characterize them, who have to operate in a completely competitive marketplace. So, you know, if DCFS doesn't get funded, then everybody's going to be, you know, all standing up because DCFS isn't getting funded because they have no other source of income. They have no other. DCFS is DCFS. There's no other. There's no competitor. But if the state universities don't get funded, everyone just, well, not everyone, but many people just say, there are others. There are other institutions. I mean, we are state investments that have been made over a very long period of time. Our buildings are state property. The taxpayers of Illinois own our campuses. And then the state can't just take a walk. It's to the state's own detriment.
Go ahead, Erica.
Well, in addition to my work in the center, I've written and implemented legislation and policy change. I've worked in policy for over 20 years, and my experience with policy is it needs to be solution-oriented, and it needs to get to the root cause. And in this political environment, we are talking ideology. It's so partisan. And until we get back to that core of what we need in policy, there's real challenges in Illinois that have been long-term challenges, and that's been kicked, that the can has been kicked past, you know, many governors, these span generations. And so we really need some real solutions, and it's not going to be easy, but we really need political leaders that will come together in a bipartisan fashion. And the public needs to understand that if we really want to solve these problems. But I think when we keep focusing on ideology and stirring emotions, that doesn't get us any quicker. So I know in the upcoming election that I'll be looking for leadership traits in the people that I vote for. And I'm going to be looking for people that are real solution oriented. Even though there's tough issues, they're going to have to be solved, but we need the right leaders at the table.
And John?
No, I completely agree. I think, one thing we talk about, you know, whether we talk about taxes, that is something that business community talks about quite a bit. And as we've been discussing today, you look at Illinois is losing population on a massive scale. Last year, every single state that touched Illinois gained population. That's not a coincidence. There are certainly other priorities that the business community have, but that's, you know, property taxes, workers' comp. Those are not necessarily why we're here tonight. But I do agree that if we don't change something soon, that the workforce issue is going to be non-existent, just because we really need to make some very significant changes. And as far as really, really come together in a bipartisan way to do it, that's the only way it's going to be possible.
A couple of the questions recently here talked about the fact that the state needs to get its arms around its spending. And there's nobody, I think, here that would argue that point, you know, at least have revenues meeting up with expenditures. It's not that simple sometimes to put that together, but because everybody is a constituency, and there's always somebody. There's a reason everything is in the budget for the state, and that is because somebody lobbied hard to get it put there, so it's hard to get it out. But the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute in the last year or so did a survey of voters and found that most people would prefer to have the budget cut than they would to raise taxes. But when they were asked after that, what do they want to see cut? For the most part, nothing. So that's the hard part of putting a budget together. We did get a question in from Facebook Live tonight, so I'll go ahead and ask that. Michael Glazer wrote in, and he wondered about some solutions, including legalizing marijuana, and for possibility of free college. We're seeing that in some other states, free college. Is that really even, have we even come close to that idea being a reality here? Being that being offered, do you know of anything like that that's been really seriously proposed?
The University of Illinois recently announced that they're going to cover tuition fees for students from families with household incomes of $61,000 or less.
It's pretty narrow, though, right? Isn't there
That's very narrow, okay. But it's a step in the right direction. I think what makes that possible is that much of a student from that family income level, much of their tuition fees would be covered by need-based aid already. Mm-hmm. And they're promising to cover the gap, which is outstanding. And I think most of us regionals are looking at that to see what we can do to that regard. But with regard to, is the state in a position to offer free public university?
Or even community college.
Community college, I'm not privy to those conversations.
Sure.
That's a whole other, there needs to be more talking between the public universities and the community colleges. But the cost of attendance is, you know, I don't know, anywhere from $8,000 to over $20,000, I think, for a public university student, depending on which institution you're at. I mean, if the state is interested in making that sort of an investment, we would be happy to open our doors and say free of charge. Our enrollment would boom.
Eric or John, anybody want to weigh in on that idea?
Good.
Personally, I'm not a fan of that.
Not a fan, just to make clear?
No, okay. not a fan. I think this is something politically that a lot of politicians have talked about that appeals to that. I know the state of Tennessee has opened up free two-year college access to all Tennessee citizens. But one of the problems I see right now, and I should have raised it at the beginning, as far as an election issue, is proprietary institutions, which are one of the biggest factors in driving up student debt. And there was a lot of work done in the Obama administration to counter this. They created a college scorecard where any institution that got financial aid had to show what the average debt was of students, the graduation rates. And all of these things are being challenged right now in the current administration and rolling back. And if you look at the college increase in debt and loads and things like that, you can actually see a trajectory since the GI Bill, which increased college access. Now, I'm not saying college access is a bad thing and increasing it, but if you don't do it at a rate that institutions have capacity, what they do is they expand access at a decreased quality. And so that's where you have other institutions like proprietary that will fill that niche, but won't have that high level quality. And if you have an environment right now like we have at the federal level that is really deregulation and does not want to put more accountability or regulation on it, that's a real dangerous way to go. So that's me from a policy perspective and a research perspective. So I always caution this. If you don't have a long-term plan in place to ensure that funding is still there in the long term, and also that institutions have the capacity to do this at a quality level.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree. And I think that, one other thing, again, just representing the business side of things, I think there are employers out there that are also willing, or it's time that they put some skin in the game. There are those conversations out there as well. Congressman Davis, this last go, when the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was working its way through, he really tried to get a subsidy basically for employers to help students with their student loans. I think we talk a lot about federal aid public aid going into the university, but what happens when these kids come on? As we talked about a little bit earlier, college student debt is it's one of the largest debt loads there is. It's second only to mortgage today. Mm-hmm. And so how can we have these conversations? And again, I think Congressman Davis did a good job of starting those. How can we have the conversations of how can employers help and put this in the game if for the workforce that they want?
We also had a couple of other folks with some questions. Larry Shapiro, if Larry would want to make his way to the microphone. And also we had Kent King, and I is it Nobles? I'm not sure on the last name. If Kent's around, he wanted to step up to the mic. Go ahead, Kent. We'll let you go first since you're closer. So.
Okay. Thank you. We've been hearing about the deep financial problems in Illinois. These are things we've been hearing about for years and years, so that's not a new conversation. I'm looking for hope, those real solutions that you mentioned. Where do you see, as we look at our candidates running for state office, where do you see initiatives that seem like they're possible real solutions to the problems that we're facing?
I don't know if anybody wants to weigh in on that necessarily. I would say, you know, and some of these ideas have come up tonight. I believe J.B. Pritzker has talked about the idea of the graduated income tax. For example, we still don't know what numbers. We're not aware of those from him yet. But there's been ideas like that proposed. And certainly, if you listen to anybody running for office, they will always tell you education is the top priority, whether that's higher education, whether that's preschool or K through 12. It's always there, and I do think most of them want to see good schools, want to see universities do well. The problem is just what we get back to earlier, the money. And if anybody wants to weigh in on that, I mean, I don't think anybody has set out to destroy public education in the state of Illinois, but I do think it's such a difficult difficult problem to solve right now. Where's the money going to come from?
Well, and if I can speak on that, a lot of these solutions don't cost money. They cost they require partnerships and people working in collaboration, but that doesn't happen as often. That's a lot of this is higher education coming to the table with business and K-12 and community partners, and so, you know, we always think there needs to be a price tag on this, but there doesn't always have to. I just came today from Joliet at a P20 council meeting for the governor's office where the state superintendent's at the table, the Illinois Board of Higher Education, the Commerce and Community Affairs, the Community College Board, the governor's office, and various stakeholders. And the things that we're talking about and the solutions we're bringing, a lot of these policy ideas and legislation come from groups like this. So I think it stems from involvement and not putting so much onto elected officials, but elected officials do need to be willing to reach out and bring people to the table and listen. I think we're talking a lot at the state level, but I think government or local elected officials are just as important, where you have school board members and an engaged constituency at all levels that'll come to the table.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, just within the last couple of weeks, we've seen the governor sign a couple bills. We had House Bill 5020, which was helping out with the MAP grants that we talked about, which are crucially important. We had Senate Bill 2354, which talks about getting college counselors together with these students, and so they understand what it's going to take to finish that degree, what it's going to take to understand how to make some of these payments, and those ideas are crucial. And you know, we talk so much about the divide currently, but those were both unanimous bills. And so, I think, one, having those conversations, and I think it's so easy with the political climate either to be apathetic or to be, I think that's one thing that we see, or to just be outright angry at everything. And I think that we need to look past that. I think we need to look at those who can come together at the table. And I think, you know, for incumbents and for new candidates alike, it's absolutely crucial that they can come together, especially on some of that. I mean, I think the pensions issue, for example, is absolutely crucial. But how can we move past the negativity that we find ourselves in? Because it's so easy to give into that. How do we rise above?
Larry, if you'd like to step back up, and I know we set you down for a minute there, so if you can make your way to the microphone, we still have a few minutes left.
Larry Shapiro, Normal, Illinois. I've also worked with Unit 5 since 1990, and I attended it. A meeting with the superintendent back around 2000, where the state came down and told us all about this problem and told us the only way it could be fixed. It was a graduated income tax because the graphs that showed expenditures that they had originally projected for their retirement programs matched exactly with the tax on income, but fell when the property tax figures came in. That's where this whole problem came from. So you have two constitutional amendments that you have to change to fix Illinois' problem. And I don't care how many pencil erasers less that you people buy, it's not going to solve $130 million or billion dollar problem. Two things solve that problem, because there's two stakeholders, the unions, the government unions in the state of Illinois, and the rich. And I thought that the program was supposed to be Rauner, was supposed to lead the rich into the table, and Madigan was supposed to lead the unions into the table, and they're going to have to sit down, because that's the only trading chips they've got. So there's my comment.
Thank you, Larry. I don't know if anybody wants to weigh in on that.
I would just say, sort of along those lines, I do think that the direction this needs to be going, particularly in respect to public higher ed in Illinois, is less hand-wringing and more hand-shaking. Several people have mentioned partnerships. I mean, that's definitely what we're looking at going forward, partnerships with our community. I mean, and I do want to clarify, we all the public universities, have numerous partnerships with our community colleges and many with our K-12 districts. But there can always be more, and so we need to do more. And we don't need, as Erica said, we don't need to wait for the legislature to tell us we have to do this. We don't need to wait for the legislature to tell us how to do it. We need to do it. We're the experts in education. We need to be doing this, and we need to be doing more of it, and we need to be working with business and industry to make sure that we're meeting workforce demands. They should be able to, they are able to, but they should know that they are welcome to pick up the phone and call a public university president or a community college president and say, hey, we need people with this specific degree, and we're not getting enough of them. What can you do? Some of that goes on. We need more of it to go on.
There is a higher ed working group in the legislature right now looking at a lot of different things. One of those things that they've been talking about is a funding formula for higher education, similar to what we see through kindergarten through 12th grade. Mm-hmm. And Katie, maybe you're closer to that. I don't know. But if anybody else wants to weigh in, they can. But is that, from a policy standpoint, what do you think about that idea?
So it's difficult timing for the universities, since many of us are down significantly on enrollment. And typically formulas are based on full-time equivalents. However, that said, I have been to, I think, all of the performance funding group meetings thus far. The Illinois Board of Higher Ed has brought together a group to discuss the idea of a formula, and I think they maybe envisioned it initially coming out of the existing performance funding formula. To skip ahead, I would just say that my personal thoughts, having been deeply involved with the K-12 formula when I was on legislative staff and now working with a public university, are that similar to K-12, if we were to go in this direction, there would have to be some sort of a foundation level established. We can't just all of a sudden say, this is the same pot of money we had last year, but now we're going to divvy it up this way. Mm-hmm. It could be horribly destructive to some of the institutions, particularly those who have seen enrollment declines in the last 5 years. So we would need to have a foundation level. It would need to have some much thought put into it. There would probably be some hold harmlesses required, which those who are familiar with K-12 know all about. But basically saying that, you know, no one's going to lose money, but going forward, this is how we're going to give you new money. That way, again, it doesn't devastate anyone quickly, but it allows growth where the growth should be.
So it sounds like this could be something that's going to be talked about, but probably for a while. We're not going to see any fast action.
I would hope so. It sure took a long time to work on the K-12 formula, and you know that was a very historic change in the last year. And we're still going to be seeing how that goes. Hopefully, well for everyone. But I would certainly hope this would not be something we would rush through.
We have about a minute left. Anybody else want to weigh in on that?
I would just say I think the main reason for doing this, you'd want to make sure it aligns with strategic goals. The Illinois Board of Education has a public agenda that sets out really strong public goals for higher education in the state. And so you would want to figure out how does that get higher education collaboratively to work towards those goals, and not just look at this in a punitive measure. And I think if it's in partnership with higher education and they can see it as a way that they could get a foundational level and a better predictor of what their revenue would be each year, as well as help to meet these more general goals, I would see it as a win-win.
All right. That's going to do it for tonight. I want to thank our panel. We had Dr. Erica Hunt, who is with the Center for the Study of Education Policy at Illinois State University. Also, Katie Enselman, who is Director of Constituent Relations at Eastern Illinois University, and John Walsh, Government and Public Affairs Manager of McLean County's Chamber of Commerce. Thanks to all of those of you who came out, those who watched online as well. This has been another of our NPR Illinois Forums for Election 2018, Seeking Solutions. We'll be traveling around the state, continuing to do so this year, addressing different topics, and we hope you can attend or at least tune into those. I'm Sean Crawford with NPR Illinois, and for WGLT, support for the series is provided by AARP. Have a good night.
This is WGLT Normal, a service of Illinois State University's School of Communication. When you hear it on air, know that you can find more online at WGLT.org. Find the articles, photos, and even bonus content available only at our website. Hear interviews with elected and community leaders and those making news by making a difference. Keep up on Bloomington Normal News and Bloomington Normal's public media at WGLT.org.